big show for you here today. It is the post-free agency panic meter with Justin Boone. We take your submissions on who we should be concerned about after the free agency fallout. But speaking of fallout, we got a big trade to discuss at the top of the show. Jaylen Waddle headed to the Denver Broncos. What does it mean for the Broncos offense? What does it mean for Jaylen Waddle's fantasy ranking? And who is going to be catching passes for the 2026 Miami Dolphins? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
What's happening, man? Things are good. This is a nice time of year. Big announcement today. Signed an extension with Yahoo, so that's the newest exciting news on a long list of things this year that I feel like we're getting a lot of pats on the back and a lot of love from people. So thank you to everyone out there for all the messages and everything I got. Thank you to you for another very nice message from you. I feel like I'm down. I got to owe you a couple here. I got to send out a couple social media messages to get even, because you've said a lot of nice things over the last few months. But things are great, man. Just continuing to chug along. And now it's time to get back to work.
Yeah, and whatever you think out there, viewers and listeners, whatever you think the number is that they had to pay Boone to put up with me for another few years, you just go ahead and tack another comma on the whole deal. So yeah, we're very excited to have Justin Boone here for several more seasons. Very excited to be paired up together. Love doing the show with Boone, and especially on days like today, man, because guess what? What's happening is you're not the only one with a big transaction here, Justin Boone. We have a piece of news to discuss here on the show today. And even before that, we had a packed show to go through, because it is our post-free agent panic meter, where we're taking your submissions on the players that you are freaking out about most after the free agency fallout. We are talking dynasty debates later. So we have a ton to get to on today's show. But first, as I mentioned, little fantasy fallout here. Jaylen Waddle traded to the Denver Broncos here. Tons of picks involved in this one. The Broncos actually get a fourth round pick back from the Miami Dolphins, but the Dolphins, in exchange for Waddle and that fourth round pick, they are getting a first rounder and a late third and another fourth round pick tacked on it here. So essentially, it's like a first, and we'll call it a first and a third here. For the Denver Broncos getting the services of Jaylen Waddle. This one shocked me in one sense, Boone, because I did not think that Jaylen Waddle was going to be on the move. However, there were some whispers, especially shout out to former Broncos player Aqib Talib on a show with Underdog, literally tweet last night forgive me, Aqib. I don't know the name of the show that you're doing there with Underdog, but he predicted that the Broncos were going to get a big time exciting playmaker, and you just remember you heard it from him first. The next day, the Broncos get Jaylen Waddle, and this comes, Boone, after a super quiet free agency period for Denver, where they didn't sign a single outside player. They make a big move here to get Jaylen Waddle. This one caught me by surprise. Definitely did not see that coming here this morning. Threw an entire wrench in my work day here. What was your reaction to Jaylen Waddle heading to Denver?
Well, it is funny, because I thought when I saw the Talib thing that it was like, oh man, is it going to be like Taysom Hill or something, right? Like just an explosive playmaker. definitely did not expect that it was going to be Jaylen Waddle, like you said. I think for fantasy, though, this is one of those situations that it's just going to complicate things. It makes it very hard to project at the moment. In real life, this is a great move for both these teams, right? The Dolphins are getting a chance to rebuild. They weren't going to be competitive this year anyway, so now they get the picks to work with. And then the Broncos finally get to make a pretty significant move here after, like you said, not doing much in free agency. But from a fantasy perspective, now you look at that Denver pass catching core, and yes, they don't really have like a tight end that's in the mix. But among those receivers, I think we both had hope for a guy like Pat Bryant, for, you know, Troy Franklin, who had some moments last year. Now they get pushed way down. Cortland Sutton, who was the incumbent number one, now he's going to have some competition. I think that pushes him into like the wide receiver 3 flex range. He'll still have some weeks. He'll still find the end zone. But I actually think Waddle eventually emerges as the number one guy here, and it puts him in the conversation as like a low-end wide receiver two, high-end wide receiver three, and the most valuable fantasy receiver on that team. And then somebody like Pat Bryant is going to have to wait out Cortland Sutton if he does eventually even get a chance. So it's unfortunate. It makes it hard. And then, yeah, the Dolphins side, it's a nightmare, but they got all the draft picks, so I'm sure we'll be talking about them after the draft when they go out and address receiver then.
Yeah, I'll put the Dolphins to the side here for a second before we kind of talk about like what to make of their roster and everything. A lot of questions there. The one thing I will say about Miami is, and look, this is a big haul here to get for Jaylen Waddle, who is coming off from a, you know, raw stat standpoint, like a couple of whatever seasons, injuries, things like that. I think they essentially had to have their socks knocked off to move Jaylen Waddle. We know that they're rebuilding, right? Again, we'll get to Miami more in depth, but they are a clear cut rebuilding team. But I still think they probably in an ideal world wanted to keep Jaylen Waddle unless somebody was going to knock their socks off. But that's exactly what Denver did, which shows to show like they really wanted Jaylen Waddle, and I can understand it. Like you mentioned, guys like Troy Franklin, even Marvin Mims. I mean, Jaylen Waddle's kind of the actualized version of those guys. Like Troy Franklin was an interesting player at times. He's like he's an interesting sleeper. He was more of a day two talent that fell into the fourth round, day three, for kind of non-football reasons, essentially, for why he fell there. Did Troy Franklin? He's a solid player, but again, Waddle's like the actualized version of that. Even a guy like Marvin Mims, who's more of a deep threat and design touches player only, Jaylen Waddle is more of the actualized version of that. And like, quite frankly, you know, I feel like I have talked about this 100 times recently, both for Denver Broncos reasons and then just kind of like the example. But remember during the season, Boone, when we were talking about, hey, is Troy Franklin, like he's out targeting Cortland Sutton. Is he like the number one receiver on the Broncos? My pushback to that is like, no, he's not. He's not better than Cortland Sutton. It's just those are the easier routes that you get to run when you're not just that standalone static X receiver. And I think Waddle's going to immediately slide into that role and get much more efficient targets, which one is a pretty big departure from what Waddle was doing with the Dolphins. I think this is another one of my things that has just been kind of annoying about Waddle the last few years, is that because they would do all the designery touches for Tyreek Hill, Waddle was always the guy that had to play outside on the ball and go against the tougher coverages on the perimeter. And even when Tyreek Hill went down last year, they didn't really change that role for Waddle in Miami. But despite that, he was still really good. Among receivers who ran 200-plus routes last year, Jaylen Waddle was 8th in first downs per route, 12th in yards per route, and 11th in successful targets per route. Like, he is an efficient receiver with good film. He beats man coverage. I've always liked him. Not like a elite or superstar player, but a good player in reception perception over the course of his career. And I think he's capable of being more if he's allowed to move across the formation. And with Sutton established as that X, I think that's definitely what's going to happen here for Jaylen Waddle in Denver. So I think he's a pretty big winner here in the fallout from this trade. Also, not to mention, Boone, like some of the reasons that Waddle was down from it's not as if he had a bad season stats-wise. It just wasn't anything spectacular. And I think the expectations were probably ratcheted up after Tyreek Hill got hurt. But we know that obviously the Dolphins were kind of falling apart organizationally, and Tua was bad, and the whole deal, like from a quarter, they played freaking Quinn Ewers at one point. Like, they were bad at the quarterback position. The other part of this, though, Miami was 32nd in plays run last year. They were 30th in neutral dropback rate. The Broncos were 5th in plays run, and they were 6th in neutral dropback rate last year. That's another reason where I think we're going to see just Waddle from a raw volume perspective jump up here. So curious, just like you said, low end 2, high end 3. Do you have like a number there where you're kind of thinking from a ranking standpoint overall on Waddle?
I haven't done the actual update. I have it open next to me, though, Harmon. I could look at it very quickly here. Like, we're moving him above Christian Watson. He would be in this Terry McLaurin range, like around wide receiver 23, wide receiver 22, wide receiver 23. And there's still upside there, like you said. And
yeah,
I was worried. We talked about this on the show before about Malik Willis going to Miami and what the volume could potentially be like there and whether it was going to be a little bit lower and what kind of concerns that was going to have. now he's in Denver. Now he's got a great play caller there. It's just such a better environment for him. So yeah, now he goes from being a guy that I was out on, who I thought was a faller after free agency, to somebody that I'll be targeting in drafts.
Absolutely. And Sutton goes from a guy that I was probably, you know, not really, really excited to draft, but probably going to be fine with wherever he was going. Now I think he probably has to come down a little bit here, because we'll talk about Bo Nix and just the Broncos offensive ecosystem on the other side of our first break when we get to the panic meter, because we do have a submission about Bo Nix. But, you know, I think obviously there's still a question about whether Bo Nix can support like two wide receiver one, wide receiver two types in, and there are still going to be like bit players in this offense. Like Franklin, if he's still on the roster, will have a role. Brian will be on the roster, but like what his role looks like, he's a big slot type too. So I think he probably still has an inside track to be the third receiver on this team. They could add a tight end in the draft. So it's going to get a little crowded there potentially in Denver. So we'll have to kind of parse the math there, but yeah, I think Sutton, from a fantasy standpoint, probably has to go down as a result of this move. But let's talk about the Dolphins side of this here real quick. You mentioned Malik Willis. I gotta say, like, did anybody run this by Malik Willis a couple of weeks ago? Like I said, I think Miami had to have their socks knocked off to get Waddle traded here. But I mean, my God, like, Malik Willis, did he know? I mean, he got 40, what do you get, like $45 million, $43 million guaranteed. That's going to make you feel good no matter who you're throwing to. But the current state of the Dolphins wide receiver depth chart is just, it looks like a dynasty team that has been ignored for a couple of years, like an orphan dynasty team that somebody was just like not paying attention to. These are some of the names now that Jalen Waddle, we're showing it on the screen. Of course, obviously Waddle's not on the roster anymore. These are some of the names. If you're not watching, if you're listening to the show, Theo Weiss, Taj Washington, Malik Washington, who I liked as a prospect, and like I'll keep an eye on Malik Washington. Jalen Tolbert, Terrace freaking Marshall on his like seventh team, AJ Herring, and they signed Tutu Atwell. So there you go, Malik Willis. Have fun with that. I already expected the Dolphins would be a pretty low volume passing team. Yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty low volume passing team in neutral situations here.
There's the real depth chart. That's what we should be showing for the Dolphins receiver depth chart, that they have two firsts, a second, and four thirds. Like, that's where it comes in now, right? They're going to be spending, I would think, at least two of those picks before the end of day two on receiver. And I would be shocked if they don't use one of those first round picks on receiver now. And that'll totally change the conversation, right? If they come away with a couple exciting rookies, that's the start of rebuilding that room. That gives Willis some weapons to work with. Like, it'll totally change. I also just wonder, is this like the precursor for now Devon Achane getting traded? Because what's the point of keeping a guy like Achane on the roster? If you're going to trade Waddle away, you might as well see what you can get for Achane. And we know there's some teams out there that would certainly be interested in him. So we're going to keep an eye on that one to see if that happens now and how that could change things. But yeah, for the people like those deep dynasty leagues, and Harmon, it's so funny because like yesterday, the day before, I dropped Theo Weiss in a really deep dynasty league that I'm in. That's how much of a sicko I am. I had him on a roster. At the end of the season, he had a couple games, man. He had a couple games. Tyreek Hill was going to be leaving. You thought maybe there was a chance. But yes, I dropped him on that roster. And now, like, in the weirdest way, I'm like kind of regretting it. Like, do I need to try to go pick him back up? Probably not. Probably not going to be a factor. And those free agent additions like Tutu Atwell and Jalen Tolbert, I had a friend message me and ask, should I go pick up Jalen Tolbert? Does he have any dynasty value now? I don't think so. Let's wait until after the draft. Let's see who they go get.
For that's another month or two. Yeah, a month and a half.
Yeah, so this is going to be up and down. I will say, though, does this open up like a strange kind of window to potentially go buy Malik Willis? Because people are going to be like, oh my God, he has no weapons. Oh no, what's it going to look like? When meanwhile, we know for sure they're going to spend draft picks and they're going to rebuild that room. So I think maybe before the draft, if you were trying to get Malik Willis, there was a lot of hype right after free agency. That wouldn't have been the time. But now after this Waddle trade, you might have a little bit of a runway here to try to get a discount on him before they definitely rebuild that room.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair, because obviously the appeal for Malik Willis from a fantasy standpoint is his rushing ability, you know, like that's obviously the whole deal here. I am excited for maybe a little Malik to Malik connection here. Malik Willis to Malik Washington. That would be exciting. But even still, you're right. They're not going to add a bunch of new guys in the room there. I think that makes total sense. If you want to go out here and grab a Malik Willis, you know, share or two before the NFL draft, when they do add somebody at the 11th overall pick or 30th overall pick. I will say this though, I'm not going to be excited about that receiver going to that spot, like from a dynasty standpoint. I know things change quickly, and I know Malik Willis, like, here's the thing with Malik Willis, it's still a very small body of work here, and I think that, you know, like, how many other options did Malik Willis even have here? Like, was the Cardinals option really open and he chose to go to Miami, or was Miami just the team that was willing to pay him the most money here? And again, that player, whoever that is, if it's Carnell Tate at the 11th pick, as Danny Kelly and I talked on Mock Draft Monday yesterday, or it's, you know, Jordan Tyson, if that's their guy there, or they wait till 30 and God forbid they take freaking KC Concepcion or something like that, and I'm like, oh geez, this is going to be rough. I'm not going to be excited about that receiver necessarily in year one, even with all the target volume up for grabs here, especially if Achan's on the roster. I kind of want to hear your thoughts on Achan if he is on the roster, because so much, I talked about this with Chris Allen last week, so much of his production from a fantasy standpoint has come via the passing game. And I mean, I guess he's projected to catch a lot of passes without Waddle on the roster, but a lot of those were checkdowns from Tua. That's not going to be happening with Malik Willis. It's just really this makes this Dolphins team very kind of bizarre to project. And I would also, last thing here, and I know I'm rambling about this, but last thing on Malik Willis, they essentially gave him a markup on the Justin Fields contract from last year. Justin Fields, by the way, was traded to the Chiefs for a 6th-round pick because he got freaking benched last year. Like, there's not any guarantee that Malik Willis starts every game for the Dolphins if he stinks. Like, that was the justification for Fields last year. It's like, well, they paid him that contract. Like, they're going to play him all year. It doesn't matter. Well, you're bad enough, you're going to get benched. And I kind of look at this roster on paper right now, especially if, yeah, they did trade Achan. There's a chance Malik Willis gets benched at some point. I don't know. A lot to consider here for this Dolphins fallout from the trade.
It's possible. I mean, Willis also a rushing quarterback, so does that increase the odds that he could potentially get hurt at some point? And then what are you looking at after that? Like, that's kind of scary too. I do think that we got to bump up Achan's receiving projection, but to me, that just feels so hollow, because it really seems like he's probably going to get traded now. If he stays on this team, the volume will be there. Yes, this moves him back up a spot or two. I didn't knock him out of my top 10, but I think I moved him down to like RB8 based on the fact that I didn't think he was going to get the same kind of receiving work. Now you just have to give it to him. Like, it's a math problem at that point, where who's getting it if not him? But we'll see where it stands after the draft. The only other guy that I will mention in Miami, and again, we're going very deep on this, but last week I wrote like an under the radar risers after free agency, and I was talking about like real, real, real deep pieces, right? Greg Dulcich last year, he finished the year as the top tight end. I mean, right? Like 40 yards in 4 of his last 5 games, like at least 40 yards. He showed at least something there. Right now on paper, he's the number one tight end. But again, with all those picks the first 2 days of the draft, would not be shocking at all if they went out and got a tight end who's going to usurp him on the depth chart as well. So that's just like a very deep, more dynasty stash kind of thing. But I felt like we had to mention him. If you were going to read off that whole receiver room in Miami, then we have to mention Greg Dulcich.
Yeah, if I say Herring, I guess I got to get to Dulcich there at the tight end position. So that makes sense. Definitely a sleeper on the radar there. But man, I don't know. This is just a very bizarre looking, I don't need to tell the people this, I think it's pretty obvious, it's a very bizarre looking Dolphins offense on paper. And some of the excitement for me to see like Malik Willis get a shot as a starter, it definitely goes down without Jaylen Waddle, because Jaylen Waddle is a very good player who I think is going to make the Denver Broncos offense much better with his presence there, which we're going to break that down and how that impacts Bo Nix from a fantasy standpoint on the other side of this quick break. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it's time to get into your submissions to the post-free agency People's Panic Meter.
Would you say it's time for everyone to panic?
Yes, I would, Kent.
Oh my God! Okay, it's happening!
No, 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 no! Wait!
Everybody stay calm! Everybody stay calm! What's the procedure?
feel like I'm back in regular season mode listening to that drop. Like, I've actually made me a little nervous. Like, do I gotta file rankings? Do I gotta set lineups? So I need to check my waivers. What's going on here? So yeah, I'm all out of sorts here. And so are the people after some of these free agency moves here, Justin Boone. So that's essentially what we're gonna be looking at here. So who are some of the players that the people are freaked out about, whether it's dynasty, upcoming fantasy season, and redraft, whatever it is, after some of these free agency moves. The first one we're gonna get into here from Dominic, admittedly, was sent prior to the Jalen Waddle trade, but it is on Bo Nix, so I think it's still worth kind of wrapping this all into the analysis we're doing on the trade here. Dominic sends in, hey guys, I believe that Cortland Sutton is on the decline. If that's the case, without a clear number one receiver, no solution at tight end seemingly on the table, unless Kenyon Sadiq miraculously falls, and most likely not as many late game comeback fantasy cheat codes to capitalize on. Does Bo Nix slip into the potentially high end streamer range instead of quarterback one? Again, I think we can use this space to discuss Jalen Waddle here coming to Denver and sort of changing the outlook for Bo Nix, because, you know, is Waddle for sure a clear number one receiver? I've always been kind of curious to see what he could do in that role. And like I said, I think we're about to see him be in that role over a guy like Cortland Sutton. So if he's able to come in and be that guy here, do we have any concern on Bo Nix potentially regressing and not being a QB1 this upcoming fantasy season?
Well, I will admit that initially when we had this down in the dock, it was before the trade, and I had some panic. And I was going to say, I think a lot of that is just tied to him coming out as a prospect and not really believing in him. But this is a guy that his first two NFL seasons has been a top 10 fantasy quarterback, and the rushing ability certainly helps. That's a big part of it, no doubt. But now that we have Waddle there, even if Waddle isn't a true number one and he's just another really solid weapon and an upgrade on Troy Franklin and Pat Bryant, I think you have no panic about Nix. Like, I think now we look at him and we just feel great about him. Not necessarily that he's going to be an elite fantasy quarterback, that he's going to get up into the top five and, you know, help you truly win your league from that position, but that he's going to be a very solid QB1 in fantasy, top 10, you know, at worst low-end QB1, and a guy that you're not going to have to pay up for. He's going to be a little lower down the ADP, and you're going to be able to get him and put him in and not worry that much about him. So, yeah, I had some concerns, but I think the fact that the Broncos went out and made this move, it removes all of that for me.
Yeah, so that was some of my concern last year, was that, like, okay, they added, you know, RJ Harvey, they added Pat Bryant, Evan Ingram is a free agent. Like, was that really enough to keep Bo Nix solidified as a top 10 quarterback? Turns out it was, for some of those, you know, kind of reasons that Dominic mentions, a lot of the, like, late game situations where they were having they were high from a neutral dropback standpoint, but that was a reason why they had a ton of pass attempts overall, were some of those late game comebacks, which Bo Nix was, you know, good enough to get them the win in those moments. But just wondered if that was going to be enough overall. It ended up being fine from a fantasy standpoint. Real life, I don't think Bo Nix necessarily took a big leap last year. This could be the type of move, though, where it does allow him to truly take that leap, and he just gets there because he's better in year three, third year in the offense, and the overall ecosystem is better around him. So I agree, no panic here on Bo Nix for me. He goes from being a guy that, like, I would be maybe lukewarm on in fantasy to much more interested in him in this third year. Still interested to see, like, what the offense looks like with Davis Webb calling the plays instead of Sean Payton. That feels like something we're just going to forget to talk about for a long time, but it is at least something to consider when we're talking about this Denver Broncos team. Just not sure it moves the needle all that much in a negative standpoint. Let's get to the next one here. Nick R. sends in this email on Jeremiah Love. Love that we're panicking before a guy is drafted, but you know, here we go. Okay, so Nick R. sends in this email. Love the show. Best in the industry. Appreciate you, Nick. How high should I be willing to go to trade for the top pick in the rookie draft this year? My team's a contender, and I've got two picks in the back half of the first round this year. Are both those picks plus my 27 first too much for Jeremiah Love? He seems like a future star, but I worry that if he's anything less than that, trading three firsts could set me back for years to come. My league is a super deep roster, 12 team super flex, where we start 11 guys each week. Okay, so I think we can answer this question more so in the phase of, like, what happens if Jeremiah Love gets drafted by, like, the Titans at pick 4? And is he in danger of being Ashton Gentied, where Gentied was a great prospect last year, but he goes to this disgusting Raiders situation? And it wasn't like Gentied was bad in fantasy, but if you traded three firsts to get to the top overall pick last year and you took him, I think you might be having a little bit of panic about those three firsts that you used to get up for Ashton Gentied. Do you have any concern about something like that happening here with Jeremiah Love?
Not so much. Like, I would answer this twofold. One, really no panic about him. Even if he goes to a team like mm-hmm. the Titans, they're going to design that offense around him. He's going to get a ton of volume. Like, not that concerned about him as a player. I don't know that he's, and we've talked about this already, but I don't know that he's like the elite Bijan Robinson, Saquon Barkley type prospect, but he's not far off, right? He may be a tier below that, but still a very, very solid player. I don't think, though, this is the rookie draft where you want to spend three first round picks to move up for really anybody. I wouldn't do it. I just think it's normally, unless your team is incredible and all you need is that one extra piece and you feel like you could just overpay, maybe you do it in that instance. But other than that, I wouldn't do it. And 2027, giving up first in 2027, that's a mistake right off the jump, because that is going to be a very deep class. Even if it is a late first, you're still going to get a really good player at that point. So I'm hoarding all my 2027 first round picks, not trading those away. In terms of then using your other two firsts from this year and their late ones, I would trade one of them or package both of them to go get a veteran running back, right? And then you get to keep everything else. You get to keep the 2027 first. Like, you're telling me you couldn't go trade for, you know, Travis Etienne, or you couldn't go trade for David Montgomery, or get one of these veterans that's in a starting role that you can get some value out of, maybe won't be a league winner for you, but can fill that spot while also getting to keep those other first round picks. And I think that's important for the thing that he said at the very end there, which is, it's a 12-team league where you're starting 11 guys each week. I'm in leagues like that. You need those bullets to be able to fire and go get pieces and to continue to reload and to continue to have those guys that can start in your lineup. It's very dangerous in a league like that to go out and spend that much draft capital on just one player. So I think there's a smarter way to build your team rather than just kind of packaging three first-round picks and going out and getting a guy like Jeremiah Love, where I think if you have two firsts this year, you could go out and get a very good running back just by using those two, and you could keep that 2027 first.
I think that makes a lot of sense to me. If Jeremiah Love was going to be on the Chiefs, or, you know, even if he was going to fall to the Commanders at seven, I think I could talk myself into being like, you know what, he might be worth the three first, just because even if he's not Bijan Robinson or Jahmyr Gibbs necessarily, I think he's closer to those guys than he is to Gentie. Probably somewhere between those. I mean, Genty's a great back, but he was more of like a big time volume back, whereas Jeremiah Love is more of this is my subjective scouting here. I think he's more of like an explosive home run hitter, which I just think increases his ceiling overall. But yeah, he's going to be on, and because at this point, I think I'd be surprised if he even gets to Washington at this point. Like, New York at five is reportedly pretty interested there. You're telling me like a rookie back on the Giants or the Titans, I probably don't want to be giving up three first round picks there when I could just go out and get maybe replicable production, especially if you're doing this as a contender, like your last finishing piece here to win a championship. I think you might just be better off trading. Yeah. Maybe getting Kenneth Walker, you know, who just went to the Kansas City Chiefs or something like that. I think that might make a little bit more sense to me. So I think we're in agreement on this one. It probably is not something that I would do, but I wouldn't panic too much. Like, I do think that Raiders situation, while running backs are always, you know, subjective to their environment and stuff when it comes to production, I do think that Raiders environment was so poisoned last year that it's like a uniquely bad spot. Like, I know the Titans might not be great.
He still had over 1,300 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns, right? Like, he was still productive week in and week out. It might not have felt like it, but he still put up a ton of volume. So he had a good rookie season, just maybe not the rookie season some people expected. Yeah.
It's a great point. Yeah. He was like maybe a mild disappointment based on his super aggressive redraft ADP. But again, I think it took a big time. Like, I don't think Brian Daboll's son is coaching the offensive line in Tennessee, you know, and is like out of his depth there, at least per my research so far. We'll see about that. Last thing before we get off this one, you said Travis Etienne. Boone, did you see this over that it's Travis?
Should we talk about Etienne? This? Yes.
You know, we should talk about this because you tried to dunk on me this year with your like French Canadian pronunciation.
I'm going to dunk on you again right now. I don't even think it's Achan. I don't even think he's saying it sounds like Achan.
Well, he said it is. It's his name.
He's saying it sounds like Achan, which is Achan, 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 Achan. Like it's you're not saying E. He's trying to make sure people aren't saying.
Well, I know it's not ETN. I get that. Yeah.
Right. That's what he's trying to. But I don't think people should be pronouncing it Achan. It's not Achan. He's just trying to say it sounds like that. I promise you, that's how it should be pronounced.
I saw an interview that he did with Steve. Shout out to Luke Easterling, Athlon Sports, a great writer. I've known him for years. He's been on the show. He dug up that actually Travis did a interview with Steve Smith prior to being drafted, where he actually all the way back then set the record straight that this is his family's name. But at Clemson, I guess, you know, we can just interpret whoever it was at Clemson. I don't know. It was like, looks like ETN to me. So we're going to call you Travis ETN, which is super cool stuff there. My brother-in-law,
I'm sure we're
going to
pronounce
like,
it 500 different ways now. Even I'm going to start pronouncing it incorrectly. Yeah, we're going to be screwing it up nonstop.
I'm just calling Travis. Travis Etienne. Etienne. Yeah. We're going to try to get the young man's name right. Okay. That's what we're going to try to do on this show. We're going to be respectful to Travis and what he wants to go by. I'm going to try to wean myself off of ETN, which, frankly, I think Travis Achan sounds cooler than Travis ETN anyway. I'm in on the name. Okay, we just want to get the record straight that Boone tried to dunk on me about this. My disgusting American pronunciation of the word or whatever. And he was wrong, too. Let the record show.
Slightly. There's degrees of being wrong.
And I was more wrong. I was more wrong. So that's what matters here. Next submission comes in from Kyle M underscore FF. Sends in this super long tweet on Bucky Irving. I mean, my God, here. Here's the gist of what Travis is saying.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are
panicked
about Bucky. Yeah, my God. I think people are a little panicked about Bucky Irving's value and outlook after free agency. Two of the highest upside areas he could work in as a running back are seemingly at risk. Goal line work, Sean Tucker, receiving work, Kenneth Gainwell. He gives a lot. If you're watching here on YouTube, you can go ahead and screenshot this and look at all the great stats that Kyle put out here on why these concerns are there from a stats perspective. Irving was solid out of the backfield as a receiver, but it's an interesting addition from the Gainwell perspective. Curious where your panic levels are at. We're already seeing Irving's ADP drop in best ball contests, and I'm sure dynasty managers are concerned that his rookie season may have been his ceiling. Boone, what is your level of concern here with Bucky Irving after Tucker's brought back and Kenneth Gainwell brought in to take a pretty big receiving role, seemingly?
It feels weird to put a guy in the coping corner this time of year. And yet, I think we have to do it. Like you look at going into this offseason, it was Rashad White's going to leave in free agency. And maybe Sean Tucker would be back on the RFA tender, but he would be the number two. And now there might be more opportunity for Irving to have some of the pass catching work. And we can get excited about that. And now it would just be a two-man backfield, not a three-man backfield. And what did they do? I think they went out and got a better player in Kenny Gainwell than Rashad White. I think Gainwell is going to be even more of a problem. He fits a lot of the same work there. I'm just super worried. I think this is a three-man committee for sure. And I just don't see the ceiling anymore for Bucky Irving. I've moved him down into like the low end RB2 range, and I think he's going to be a disappointing back, and it's super unfortunate because even when he came back from the injury last year, I thought he had a chance to get going. They had a pretty good schedule. We saw some decent games from him, but really not any true ceiling games. And now I wonder how often is he actually going to have these ceiling games if this is the situation where Kenny Gainwell is an overqualified number two and Tucker is there taking goal line work. Aren't you worried?
Yeah, I'm definitely worried. I will say March 17th coping corner feels super harsh for Bucky Irving. Probably the only time I'm sure in our post free agency panic meter show. I don't even know if we did post free agency panic meter shows. I'm sure we did in previous seasons. I don't know that we ever threw anybody in the coping corner in March, but you know what? I love the boldness, Boone. Big bag Boone on the contract extensions. Just like, you know what? Coping corner for Bucky Irving. A serious note, I do think that when we're looking at the Bucky Irving thing, the only like maybe devil's advocate I would play here is you know, Sean Tucker as the goal line back. Like, they gave Sean Tucker the exclusive rights for Agent Tenor. He might not even be on the roster. Like, they were kind of waffled on him even getting there. So that would just be like one thing I'd monitor here. I wouldn't say like, oh boy, they brought back Sean Tucker. He is for sure going to be the goal line back previous, like going forward. No question about it. That is just something I think. I think that just that would be one like silver lining here. Maybe that happens. But right now, definitely pretty concerning from a Bucky Irving standpoint. There's no question he is one of the bigger guys you got to worry about coming out of free agency. Producer Colin is telling me that we actually did put someone in the coping corner last post free agency pod, and it was Josh Downs. God, what a relationship I've had with my guy Josh Downs. It's like I'm in, I'm out, snip snap, snip snap, snip snap with Josh Downs. So I don't even know what we said. I'm sure it was because Daniel Jones signed there, which is funny because Daniel Jones was good with the Colts and Josh Downs still deserved to be in the coping corner. So what a wild ride I've gone on with Josh Downs in the last 365 days. Speaking of Producer Colin, it's been a minute since Producer Colin has tried to jam his own takes into the show here, but he has successfully done it because somehow he's got a submission here to the panic meter. Producer Colin sends in this tweet on Breece Hall. Tell me why it's not over for Breece Hall dynasty managers. Look at Producer Colin's cute little avatar there. I wonder who took that picture for him, leaning in some like New York City alley or something. What an artistic guy, our fearless producer Colin. Okay, what's the panic meter for Colin and the other Breece Hall bros in dynasty?
I'm going total panic. Maybe that's a little much too with Breece Hall, but we just haven't seen it from him now in a couple of years. And it's been the dysfunction of the Jets organization and the Jets offense and the lack of a real quarterback. And yes, I think Geno Smith could be an upgrade there. I think Geno Smith's a lot better than what we saw from him in another bad setting last year in Vegas. So maybe he comes back and has a bit of a bounce back year in New York, but we just haven't seen it in a couple seasons from Breece Hall. Now, he's in a backfield where if things do start to turn around, he could be a potential workhorse there. He could emerge again. It's possible. So I'm not going to put him in the coping corner. I'm not giving up on him, but I get why everyone feels so down on him. And it's because we thought there was a chance he was going to escape New York. We thought there was a chance he was going to go to a contender, and it didn't happen. They kept him around. He's stuck in that environment again. And it just seems overall like this coaching staff with the Jets, they're just like keeping the seat warm for whoever's actually going to take over next year, right? Like, I just don't see a lot of outs for them. I don't see a lot of paths to them having a great season or this offense being really meaningful for, you know, real life or fantasy. So, yeah, I have the same like feeling of dread for Breece Hall. And yet he is a talented player. He's not that old either. I think he's only 25. Mm-hmm. He's going to be 25 this year. So there's a chance. And that's why we're not going to put him in the coping corner. But there's a lot of reason to panic on him staying in New York.
I also think, and this will dovetail into our next one here, because somehow we're staying on Jets Island. I will say that of the teams that I were probably most on the tanking radar pre-free agency, I would say it was, you know, look, I know nobody tanks in the NFL actually, but we'll say the eye on next year teams prior to free agency, three of them would have been Arizona, Miami, and then the Jets. And I would say of those three teams, the one that really probably tried to do more to be good this year, despite having a load of draft picks and everything like that, it's actually the Jets. Like, if you look at it, and by the way, I don't think that they're going to be good necessarily, but it is a reminder that new staff in Arizona, Miami, this coaching staff, and probably this general manager, even though he's acquired all these draft picks, like, they got a win to probably save their jobs. And, you know, on defense, they signed a lot of older veterans like David Onyemata, Demario Davis. They go out and trade for Geno Smith because they didn't want to negotiate with anybody on the open market. They're like, we have to get Geno Smith. So we got to go trade for Geno Smith and trap him here with Breece Hall and everybody. Like, their offensive line is pretty solid. The receiver core is actually pretty interesting too, which again is going to dovetail us into our next submission here because it's on Garrett Wilson. Let's just get into that right now as we're talking about Jets ecosystem. Kyle L. sends in this email on Garrett Wilson. Look, I don't want to live here in La La Land, But I drafted Garrett Wilson in Dynasty three years ago. I can't trade him at his current value. I'm a desperate, yearning, pathetic man. Oh my God. I need a miracle. The universe said, I'll cook you up something with that I've got in the fridge, but you're not going to like the look, smell, or taste of it. And to that I say, thank you very much. I'm actually starving. I know I'm insane for being somewhat hopeful that Geno can make Garrett Wilson transform into the beautiful fantasy butterfly we know he can be, but I'm a sicko for the underdog. I absolutely love this. Rocket ship slash moon emojis. See y'all in week 12 when Geno has been benched for Mike White and Garrett Wilson is the wide receiver 22. Don't try to talk me out of it. I'm a lost boy and I'm riding that gator to Tinseltown. Kyle in Vermont. P.S. Please help me. Tell me it's all going to work out. By the way, this is the energy I want from you guys when sending in these panic emails. That was perfection. From Kyle. This is what I want to see from you guys when you send in the panic. Don't send me, I'm panicking about Garrett Wilson. Thanks. Like, no, 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 no. Send in stuff like this that Kyle just did. This is gorgeous. Anyways, okay. Do you want to live in La La Land here, sort of the scenario that I was painting a little bit, where this Jets offense could maybe be functional, maybe just below average, not outright the worst unit in the entire league?
I want to live there. I don't really see it happening. And I think for Wilson, I'm looking at him very similar to the way that I'm looking at Breece Hall, where Breece Hall, the last couple seasons for fantasy, RB 18, RB 21 and fantasy points per game, right? Like Wilson, in my mind, just like Breece Hall, in the right environment, would be a top 10 fantasy asset at his position. He would be a great producer. He would be great for Dynasty. He's still young. He's going to be 26 years old this year. Everything would line up for him, and yet he's with the Jets. So will it be a little better? I think we're saying we probably think it could be. Like, we think that Geno Smith could be a little better, maybe at quarterback, and have a bit of a bounce back season and stuff. And yet, how high could you push Garrett Wilson up your draft board? Like, you move him up into that. He's in the wide receiver two range. Like, I can't get him anywhere near where I want to put him, and that's just because of the environment in New York.
Yeah, and it's even like Garrett. I want to be in on Garrett Wilson because I love Garrett Wilson. Same. Every single year. But even like from, you know, the market perspective, ADP wise, he's never going low enough. Like, he's always at somewhere between wide receiver 15 and 17. It's like, okay, well, even if he works out, which he was kind of producing as a wide receiver, like mid wide receiver two last year, like perfectly in line with where he was drafted. That's kind of the best case scenario. And I'd love to, if he was at wide receiver 22 this year, I'd really love to draft him, because I do actually think that, I mean, the Frank Reich of it all is still hanging over this, and that kind of makes me want to completely walk back everything I'm saying. But I do think that Geno, even as bad as he was last year, like, he's not going to be as good as he was in Seattle, but I don't think he's going to be as bad as he was in Las Vegas last year. So if he's just like somewhere in the middle there, I think that's actually can turn out fine for the Jets offense. I'm just hoping from an ADP perspective, Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson are going in a range where it turns out fine can actually be a win in ADP. And unfortunately, that's just like never the case, because everybody knows these guys are good football players. They just don't have like the Jets tax on them as much as they probably need to. Very curious to see where that lands from an ADP standpoint this year. So that was a lot of Jets talk. But Kyle, great email. Kyle in Vermont, well done there. That was perfect. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We come back, more players that you guys are panicking out about. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through your submissions to the People's Panic Meter. These next three are all pretty like DJ Moore trade fallout related here. So let's start with Jimmy P's submission on Khalil Shakir. With the addition of DJ Moore, I'm a little concerned that Khalil Shakir will get fewer opportunities, and I have him in a keeper league for two more seasons. The new staff indicated longer reception opportunities, but that was before DJ was signed. He did get a lot of looks in the playoffs, but that was due to injuries. Boone, what's your level of concern on Khalil Shakir after your Bills traded for DJ Moore?
I'm going to do it again. We're putting him in the coping corner. I think fantasy-wise, Khalil Shakir already was like barely fantasy relevant, right? He was like, you know, wide receiver three flex option, if that some weeks. Like last year he played 16 games. He had 719 yards and four touchdowns. Like this is not just because he was the Bills' top receiver and best fantasy receiver doesn't mean that he is a great fantasy option. And I think in real life, he's still a very good player. He's still a player that I'm happy is on my favorite team. But where do we see this going? Like DJ Moore is going to come in and give him, I would say, more target competition than he's had. DJ Moore is going to come in and not maybe be a true number one receiver, but be the best option that the Bills have had probably since Stephon Diggs was there. And I think that just makes Shakir fall down to where he should be, which is just like a contributing piece of that offense and not a guy that is going to, you know, step up and have a ton of big games. Not even that he did that. Like last year, you look at his fantasy performances, he only topped 13 fantasy points in half PPR four times all year. So things that actually move the needle, he's not doing it that often. So now you're going to add DJ Moore to the mix. I think it's going to become maybe even more infrequent. I just don't get it with him. I think he's somebody that we don't need to talk that much about for fantasy.
I unfortunately think you're probably right about this, even though I'm a big fan of Khalil Shakir's game. And a big reason that he's been, and he hasn't even, to be honest, been all that great for fantasy anyways, but a big part of the reason that he is because he gets so many of those screens and design touches. And I don't think DJ Moore is going to be used as heavily on screens as he was in Chicago at times, but I don't think it will be zero. And how often were other guys getting screens in Buffalo the last few years? So, yeah, I do think Khalil Shakir is probably a pretty big loser from a fantasy standpoint after the DJ Moore trade. And I also think there's probably more target competition coming in Buffalo via the NFL draft. So I do think like Khalil Shakir is fine, good real life player, but probably like kind of where he is from a contractual standpoint, which he's making like $13 million a year, which is good money at the receiver position, but doesn't indicate that you're even like a true number two at the position. I think Khalil Shakir is an awesome number three receiver to have. And I think at times the Bills just haven't had a one or a two. So he's had to get a lot more volume than you probably ideally would want. So I do like Khalil Shakir, but I'm with Boone. I think from a fantasy standpoint, probably coping corner adjacent right now. Let's get into, again, some of the guys that DJ Moore is leaving behind in Chicago. Let's start with this email from Bruno on Roma Dunze. Hey, Matt and Boone, love the show. We love you, Bruno. How do you guys see the role for Adunze in the Bears offense? Is the panic high? Thanks. Boone, panic meter on Roma Dunze here.
I have some panic. I mean, DJ Moore leaving is going to free up a little bit and he'll take some of that. Last year, we saw at the beginning of the year, had that great opening month and then came back from the bye week and just wasn't the same producer. Had a couple decent games after that, but just not really the guy that you wanted in your fantasy lineup from that point on. I think the way that they've constructed this offense and the fact that in Ben Johnson's first year there, they brought in Colston Loveland and Luther Burden with fairly high picks. I think those are the guys that they're going to try to build this thing through. And Adunze is going to be a contributor. Adunze is going to be a really good piece there. But I don't feel strong that he's going to emerge as that number one that maybe we thought he was going to be at the start of last season. Though I am curious what you think. I just think from a fantasy perspective, when you have a receiver that hasn't really broken out through his first two seasons, it's a probabilities thing, right? Like the likelihood of him emerging and being this really superstar player each year that we don't have that big production, it starts to drop off a little bit more. And I think that's where I'm at with Adunze, where we're still in that pocket where Colston Loveland finished the season strong. Luther Burden was limited in his usage last year, but when he did get out there, really performed. I think those two guys are going to be the players that this passing attack is built around, and Adunze is going to unfortunately fall to potentially third in the pecking order there.
I think what might be the biggest problem for Adunze is even that if he hits and hits it big in terms of him being like the player he was drafted to be, and I think some like the player, his talent kind of slots him in as from a fantasy standpoint, is I do think he's like going to lose out on some of the designer, like easy button touches to a guy like Luther Burden, because there's just no question that Burden is more dynamic, even as prospects. Like, Burden was more dynamic with the ball in his hands than Rome Odunze. Like, Odunze is probably he's definitely the better route runner, a better like separator down the field. Again, even as prospects relative to the rookie season, the whole deal, whatever, like he's got the advantage there. But it, like, from accumulating fantasy points, like getting those easy button touches at wide receiver really matters, and Burden can do more than that as well. So I think that's the problem for him, why I think some panic is maybe fine to say. But I also think too, like, if you go back and watch the beginning of the year, and I just kind of did this because of like working on DJ Moore, I mean, it was just like they were building the offense and building the passing game around him, and he was getting some of those easy button touches and moving across the formation. And then he got hurt. Like, I do think that the foot injury and that variable is just like not going to get discussed enough. And like listening the coaching staff, like talk about this, like talking to him about it after the season, I do think that was really disruptive to what looked like a breakout season that was happening for him. So by no means does that, as I would say, like the absence of information does not mean complete information. We don't know how the rest of the season would have gone for Odunze, but I think that's a reason to be like still optimistic that they were building the offense out of him and it was going well at the start of the year. And then like the injury was probably a little more devastating, I think, than people gave it credit for.
I would also present the counterpoint that the rookies were just kind of too new at that point later in the season. As those guys got ramped up a little more, then they start to shift more towards them. But there was a ton of injuries last year. There was a lot, like DJ Moore still being there, that's going to change this season. I think right now, this time of year, I'm probably too much in my head in terms of like projections and kind of doing the math and going over like, you know, the numbers for how it's actually going to turn out and trying to figure that stuff out this far away. But for me, I have Luther Burden ahead of Odunze. Again, that doesn't mean that Odunze is not relevant at all fantasy wise. It just pushes him down into like the wide receiver three range, as opposed to potentially being, you know, wide receiver two or better, which is what he was in the first month last year. He was like a top 12 fantasy option. I just don't see that ceiling. I think we're looking at him more as a wide receiver three who will have some spiked weeks.
Well, that transitions us into our next one here, which is from Pete on Bears wide receivers. Pete asked, which Bears receiver do I want? Burden was fun last year. There's a ton of hype, but I can't shake the idea that Odunze is definitely the better receiver when healthy. I think there's some, you know, potential like, that's true, that like I think it should be kind of even between these two guys. Like, I think the odds that, well, frankly, I don't know that any of them is going to be a wide receiver one, because I think Colson Loveland is the best player in the passing game right now. I think the odds that either of these guys hits is probably pretty even. So like, which Bears receiver do I want? My answer has been, and I feel like I'm going to say this a billion times before week one, like, yeah, just draft these guys. Like, be in on Bears pass catchers, because we should be wanting the upswing on these guys, especially with DJ Moore off the roster now.
Yeah, things were good last year and Ben Johnson's first year there with Caleb Williams. I think it's only going to get better in year two, and I'm really excited about all these guys. In terms of my rankings, I have Burden maybe a little high. I have him at wide receiver 18 in redraft, and I have Odunze at wide receiver 29. So there's a bit of a gap there. Maybe you think it should be a little bit closer. I think that is totally fair. But for me, I'm kind of pushing the chips in more on Burden.
Next one comes in from David S., who sends in this tweet on Brian Thomas Jr. BTJ looks like he's stuck being a sacrificial X with Jacksonville for the duration of his rookie deal unless someone overpays the Jags for his service. What is your level of panic on Brian Thomas Jr., who certainly looks like is not going anywhere in terms of being on the Jaguars roster this year?
It's total panic for me at this point. I don't think there's any path, unless he gets traded, I don't think there's any path with him staying with the Jags where he gets back to that rookie season production. I just don't think it's going to happen. It's a different offense now. He's got way more target competition. And yeah, I think the hope from a fantasy perspective is you're just praying that he ends up getting moved at some point this offseason, though the longer it goes, yeah, it seems less and less likely here. So yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, definitely worried about him.
Yeah, all the local reporting has been like Jacksonville does not want to trade him. Some other reporters have said there's a chance, but Schefter shot it down as well. And I think a lot of that comes down to what I said about Jalen Waddle. The Jags would need to get their socks knocked off with a big offer to trade Brian Thomas Jr. And like, he's coming off of a down season. Like, who's going to trade a first round pick plus for Brian Thomas Jr.? Probably nobody. And for that reason, I think I'd rather just hang on to him and see if he can, like, he comes into camp this year and he looks awesome and like, oh boy, now we can do more with him. Like, I think that that is what the Jags are hoping to happen here. And I think we'll see if that happens, but I think he's going to be on this roster for the rest of the season and probably for the rest of his rookie contract.
It's probably also telling that when I first saw this question on the list, in my head, I was like, is he not already in coping corner? Do we have to talk about him? Like, that's where we're at with BTJ.
I mean, dude, to be honest with you, like, these last two things that we've talked about, Bears, Jags, I think I said this in January. Like, I don't want to talk about either of these receiver rooms for the entire offseason, which I know is unrealistic, because, like, nothing is going to have changed, I think, from January. Like, we knew DJ Moore wasn't going to be on the Bears roster in, like, when they drafted Luther Burden last year. We knew it wasn't going to. So it's like, okay, pretty much all that analysis, let's just keep that rolling forward. For the Jags, I think we kind of knew what this situation was going to look like, so let's just keep that rolling forward. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that the idea that he was going to not be on this team, like, yeah, you got to be in the coping corner if that's what you were hanging on to for Brian Thomas Jr. But, yeah, definitely a situation that if he's the player he was last year, not ideal from a fantasy standpoint, him being in Jacksonville. We're going into our last break of the show, and that is going to do it for us on the Yahoo Sports Network. But we're going to keep going here on YouTube to hit Boone's Dynasty Debate questions. We will get into that on the other side of this quick break. All right, we're back and we're getting into some dynasty debates here. So let's jump right into it. All right, now I should note, this is not our usual dynasty debate segment here where we're taking your submissions, because, I mean, the listeners have driven most of the content on this show here. The listeners and the Denver Broncos, shout out to the Denver Broncos for most of the content here on our show in addition to our listeners. So for this one, though, Boone, we're doing a little bit of a different here. We're not doing listener submissions. This is kind of, again, throwback to the regular season mode here. This is sort of in the same mold of the six-pack of questions, where these are six questions that you have from a dynasty debate standpoint.
Yeah, so this is sort of a dynasty week for me this week. I put out my updated dynasty trade value charts on Monday, and that was with all the changes after free agency. Today, I put out an article on some of the players that I'm trying to buy. Later in the week, I'm going to do some sells. I'm going to do some bench stashes. So we got lots of dynasty content coming out this week. I am knee deep in it at the moment. So I think it made sense for me to just kind of come up with some of these topics that were things that maybe I was struggling with a little bit when I was working on the rankings and the values. So let's start with the first one here. And guess what? We are going to Minnesota, a team that we love talking about, that offense. Well, they might have finally found a quarterback, Harmon, who is not J.J. McCarthy. My first question here is Kyler Murray about to return to fantasy relevance in that Minnesota ecosystem? And then on top of that, which wide receiver who got a new quarterback in free agency do you think is the better dynasty asset? And these are two guys that I have back to back. I won't tell you in what order, but Justin Jefferson or Drake London?
I am also redoing my dynasty wide receiver rankings here. I was actually going to do that before the show today, and then Jalen Waddle had to go and get traded. So a little bit, which again, now it's like, well, might as well just wait to get that update in as well. But yeah, I had these guys very close in my pre-updated version. We also, by the way, have not talked about Kyler Murray on this show, because that trade went down on Thursday evening after the show with Chris. So we haven't talked about Kyler Murray at all. I think the answer is pretty clearly Justin Jefferson here. And I love Drake London. Drake London is younger. But I'm not really that optimistic about this Falcons offense this year, man. I mean, Tua was bad with the Dolphins last year, declining player. Michael Penix, total unknown. Just feels like a punt year for the Falcons, where Tua is available for cheap. He's left-handed. I mean, that's been like 90% of the justification for why they paired him with Michael Penix. Well, they're both left-handed, so we don't have to flip the offense around. Okay. Not really sure structurally what Stefanski's offense is going to look like. I'm like curious about Jahan Dotson as a potential wide receiver too, but that's only because I'm a sick freak. So like, that's it. And in Minnesota, while I have questions about Kyler Murray, you know, and working over the middle of the field and all the stuff I've talked about on the show over the years, he's a guy that even in an offense where he hasn't fit the last 3 years, he's still like 18th in EPA per play among quarterbacks with 300 plus plays over the last three seasons. Like, he's still an above average, if not just like perfectly average, starting quarterback with the ceiling to be better than that in the right environment. Now, again, I have questions about this Minnesota environment overall, but I don't have any questions about Justin Jefferson. Like, I think he pairs pretty well with Jefferson, does Kyler Murray. So I don't know, Boone. I think I'm strongly leaning towards Justin Jefferson here. Do you feel the same way, or am I being too dramatic on this?
Well, I don't think this is a situation where it's like I need to give you a grade or something. I don't know that there's really a right or wrong answer. It's very close in terms of the two receivers.
Look, if you want to tell me I'm an idiot, you can tell me I'm an idiot.
No, I looked at it like a coin flip.
Every day of the week.
And really, the last thing that I came down to in terms of the tiebreaker is just that London's 2 years younger. And so I gave him the slight edge. I put him one spot ahead. But value-wise, they are right in the same range. And for all the reasons that you just said, I do think this is going to be a positive for Jefferson, having Kyler Murray there and potentially getting what we think will be a little more competent quarterback play than the chaos that J.J. McCarthy brought last year. And then for Murray, he's definitely fantasy relevant again. And I mentioned it before. I think he's a guy that you should be going out and trying to get in trades at the moment. And I normally don't do that too much when it's a guy who signed in free agency and went to a good destination, because the dynasty value gets inflated when that happens. And yet still, I don't think people are pushing Murray up high enough to where he should be. And his fantasy numbers declined like six straight seasons, and he's coming off a bad year. But before that, five straight years as a top 12 fantasy quarterback on a per game basis. So there's no question that he can get back to that range with my guy, Kevin O'Connell. You know, we're going to say that the McCarthy thing was just the blip on the radar. That was the outlier. And really, O'Connell, the success that he had was with veteran guys. And there's lots of questions about Kyler Murray. He has his flaws, but he's coming in as someone who has a lot of experience. And it seems like the players are very excited about him coming there as well. And I don't think that means nothing. I definitely think that counts for something, that this could get them excited again. I mean, look back to the Justin Jefferson interviews last year after every game. He did his best. He put on a brave face, but it was pretty evident how he felt about how things were going. And now he's going to get a chance to get things going and have a bounce back here with Kyler Murray. So I'm with you. I don't agree on the Jefferson thing, but it's close enough that I'm not going to give you a hard time for that. I think it could have gone either way. Now, we got a big one to talk about, and we had to discuss this over and over throughout the season in terms of what was going on with the Buccaneers receivers. Now we know that Mike Evans is gone. How are you approaching this Bucs receiver room with Emeka Egbuka, who started the season so strong, and then as the year went along, we just constantly mentioned how he'd had like one good game in the last 7 weeks, last 8 weeks, last 9 weeks. Like, he was not performing for fantasy from that point on. Chris Godwin, who's somebody who has done it before, who's been a wide receiver one in fantasy multiple times. Now with Mike Evans gone, what does that mean for him? And then kind of the sneaky one is Jalen McMillan, who, you go back to the rookie season, had a lot of touchdowns last year, shows up on the scene at the end of the year after that really scary injury before the season, shows up at the end of the season and actually looked pretty good and was earning some targets. So how are you approaching these guys?
Yeah. McMillan's the one I want to go back and like watch those games a little bit more and chart those games. That's just going to be such a small sample size, obviously, because I think who he was is he was a middling prospect, not a bad prospect, but like middling prospect, kind of went where he should have in the NFL draft. And I think he was very big play dependent in his rookie year, not a consistent player, which is probably, I think, what he ends up being. I think he's going to be a big play player who's not necessarily a consistent guy, but somebody I'd be interested in from a fantasy standpoint if people want to completely ignore him, which is kind of what they did last year in the summer before he had the injury and the whole deal. So he's somebody I'm interested in to some degree. Egbuka and Godwin is interesting. You know my feelings on the Egbuka rookie season. Like, I kind of want to look back in it in just in totality and not, and almost kind of put the, now that there's some space behind it, we're not as burned by it, just kind of put aside the weird nature of his rookie season, because I'm not sure how like instructive that is, other than it might keep us from saying he could be like a future elite receiver in the league, which frankly was not what he was supposed to be. He wasn't supposed to be an elite receiver in the league. He was more of a guy, at least to me, I thought would be a great number two. The one thing I would say, Boone, is that I'm not totally sure about is just like the roles of these guys, because I still feel like in an ideal world, Egbuka and Chris Godwin should be deployed in similar ways. The only thing I would say about that from like a power slot standpoint is that Zach Robinson did a really good job getting all of those guys slot reps in the 2024 season with the Atlanta Falcons. All four of Ray McLeod, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Darnell Mooney had slot route rates above 35% that year, 33-35%. I think if we get that this year, both Godwin and Ibuka can hit. But if you can tell, I'm like not very certain about all of this. I don't have like a strong feeling on any of these guys because I'm not sure how strongly to feel about like Baker Mayfield at this point and just kind of where the Bucks are as a franchise.
And I would deem myself like cautiously optimistic. Like there's value to be had here. Mm-hmm. I don't think people are talking about this receiver room enough. And that normally happens after you have kind of a down season. But we talked about it throughout the year. Like there was a lot of reasons for it. There was injuries to these guys. There was injuries to the offensive line. There was injuries to Baker Mayfield. Like there was a lot of problems with that offense last year. And now you hope that you get some better injury luck and you hope that they can kind of settle things down and you can get more of those meaningful games from Ibuka on top of the fact that he's still just so young, right? Like he showed up on the scene and was immediately good. And it almost was like we started treating him like a veteran, which oddly enough is what all his teammates were saying he was like, right? They were like, oh, he's not like a rookie. He's like a veteran in the preseason and training camp. So I think we are almost looking at him like that as like a veteran that disappointed us, but that was just the way that last year went. So I'm willing to buy on all these guys. I think Chris Godwin's even somebody that a couple of years ago I was trading away. He had the injury. He was more of like a volume player, but I think he's one of those guys and they're kind of very different, right? Like Godwin, you're looking at getting him as like a discounted veteran. You're trying to get him on the cheap to potentially give you, you know, another good year or two where his manager right now, maybe they're scared off by the way things went last year, by the injuries that he's had. And maybe you can go in there and get a guy who it wouldn't shock me at all if either Ibuka or Godwin end up being like the number one receiver in this offense, getting the most targets and being meaningful for fantasy. Right now, though, I'm cautiously optimistic because I have Ibuka lower than you would normally have a guy who started the way he did last year, down in that like low end wide receiver two range for dynasty. And really in a similar range for redraft because he still has, he has a lot of upside. Godwin, very interesting to me though, as somebody that I think could still have something left in the tank and with Evans gone, could be more work for him there and maybe he steps up. And then yeah, McMillan, not somebody that you're going to trust as like a volume play, but sneaky, right? Like I said, I think it was 8 touchdowns his rookie season. And then last year comes back in the final month, not only was earning targets, he posted a 100-yard game during that stretch. So he's going to be a part of this offense. He's going to have starter snaps now, and we'll see where that goes. But that's a spot where I think people should be looking seriously to potentially invest, at least gauging, right? Throw out some lowball offers, kind of see where, you know, the managers are in terms of how they're valuing those guys after the weird year. And now let's go the other way with it. Let's talk about Mike Evans and some of the other receivers that changed teams recently. Out of these guys, who do you think improved their dynasty value the most by changing teams recently? Mike Evans, DJ Moore, who we talked about earlier, or Wandell Robinson, one of your favorites?
Don't put me in a box to be mean to Wandell. Come on, man. I think improved their dynasty value the most. I mean, I don't know that we could really, and this is like kind of just the way the question is worded here, and I'm going to be like an annoying lawyer about this. In terms of increased their dynasty value the most, like I don't know that Mike Evans, we could say he increased his dynasty value because, I mean, he's a probably a better a situation, more potential like ability to consolidate targets there in San Francisco, but he still could be like retired by this time next year. So I don't know if I could say he really increased his dynasty value the most. I would probably say it's DJ Moore simply because Bill's you know, Bill's situation here, I'm pandering to the crowd.
I didn't
want to
lead the witness, but come on. Yeah,
but I mean, yeah, it's got to be DJ Moore. Even if Wandell Robinson like goes to a coach who believes in him, there's a strong chance he never sees 140 plus targets in his NFL career again. I kind of think it would be tough if it was Wandell Robinson for the Titans, because it means that their other additions and other players didn't really work out here. DJ Moore, though, I mean, he goes to a situation where Josh Allen is his quarterback, a coach he's played with before, an offense that he told me the Super Bowl he liked playing in, talked about some of that. he's an off-season winner in free agency overall, as Chris and I talked about. So I think it kind of has to be him, because clearly by sending a second-round pick and guaranteeing some of the future money here in his contract, they don't want this to be like a one-year rental. They want him to be a multi-year solution in Buffalo.
Yeah, and like I said, I worded it in a kind of a specific way to maybe lead you a little bit, but really it comes down to how far DJ Moore's value had fallen, right? Like, a couple of years ago, right, you were looking at him as maybe, you know, just outside the top 12, kind of in that range, and then it was just, you know, a disappointing year, and then last season, he was dropping down into, like, the 40s, like, even lower, because he's not young. He turns 29 this year. So it was more about where his dynasty value had gotten to, and now this at least gives him a chance. So like I said earlier in the show, I don't think he's going to be like a true number one. I don't think he's going to like find the fountain of youth there, but I think he is going to be a much more productive player than he was in Chicago the last couple seasons. So very excited about that, and love any time that you are going to talk up a Bills player and say that they're a riser. So that is good. Let's move on to the next one here. This is interesting. I think your answer is probably going to go one way, but I want to mention both these guys. Which free agent tight end who landed with a new team do you prefer in Dynasty? And the one is Isaiah Likely going to the Giants. The other is Chigakonkwo going to the Commanders.
Which one do you think I'm going to say? You see, you think
I think you're going to say Isaiah Likely. I think everyone is very high on Isaiah Likely, and I think he is the right answer. He's the one that I have ranked higher. And yet, I put this out there because I think there is a chance that Chigakonkwo could have similar value, even though I don't think anyone's looking at him that way.
Oh yeah, I'm taking the hipster answer all the way here. I was gonna say Chig regardless of what you said. I'm just pretty skeptical of the whole Giants situation. You know, people are like, oh, he's gonna be used by Matt Nagy like Travis Kelce in Kansas City. Well, here's the problem. Isaiah Likely is not Travis Kelce. That's number one. Number two, like Theo Johnson, solid player there. They also signed, oh God, what's his name? They signed the blocking tight end. I can't believe I'm forgetting his name. So I was just talking
Chris
about
Manhertz.
Oh, Chris Manhertz. Yeah, they signed him. So like they're going to be kind of a 12 personnel heavy team, I guess. I think the Chiefs stuff with Nagy out of 12 personnel was like whatever. I don't know. Like I just, the whole Nagy thing throws me off here, and I don't think the Giants have had a great offseason in my opinion. I know they've gotten some names here that people know, but I just don't love the setup of that ecosystem right now. And look, I mean, famous last words here to be talking about, oh, the Commanders have really been crushing it. That's great. But I am intrigued, and you know, this is a thread I keep pulling on. I just think David Blau is going to run a very different offense in Washington than what we have seen the last few years with Cliff Kingsbury at the helm. And Chigakonkwo threw another kind of log on the fire here to this. He did an interview, and I can't credit who it was. I totally don't remember, but talking about how like when David Blau was selling him on the vision here, he was showing him, you know, some clips of Ben Johnson's offense. Like, I think this is what this offense is going to look like in Washington. We'll see if David Blau is good enough to execute the vision. But I think that, you know, Chigakonkwo is not like a true inline tight end necessarily. He's more of like a move around piece. Sam Laporta has kind of been that guy for Detroit recently. So I think that we'll see sort of a good vision here for Okonkwo. So you're right that the right answer is probably Isaiah Likely, but I think it's much closer than people would imagine. And because Okonkwo will be cheaper, I'll go ahead and say that I'd rather have Okonkwo from a cost perspective.
I'm also like, and I do think Likely is going to be good for fantasy and potentially be a top 12 option. But the one thing that worries me, and I think I might have brought this up on the free agency recap show, is that like they had him in Baltimore. They had Mark Andrews. They basically had to make a decision between them. And they went with Mark Andrews, the older guy. Like normally a smart organization, which I think the Ravens are, don't let good players, especially young good players, leave. And they let him go. Now, you could counter that by saying that Harbaugh went to New York and Harbaugh let him come with him. So maybe that just is a moot point. But to me, there's that concern. And then there's the other part of this, which is I think Likely could start the season very strong because I think Malik Nabers is going to be slow to start the year or maybe even not start the year in time, coming back from a serious injury. And yes, they've added Darnell Mooney. And yes, they added Calvin Austin. But I think Likely somebody that could come in and get a lot of volume early on, and then maybe teeter off a little bit as the year goes along. So I think that's something to keep in mind. And Okonkwo, I know it was a different offense, but we've seen tight ends do well, you know, with Jaden Daniels. We saw Zach Ertz, you know, even last year, tight end 14 in fantasy points per game through the first 13 weeks. And I know Daniels was hurt for a little bit of that, but we saw Zach Ertz be productive in Washington. And Okonkwo is really going to come in and kind of take over that role. And Brandon Ayuk is probably going to end up there, I think, but Brandon Ayuk's got a lot to prove as well, even if he's going to be the number two option in that offense. We haven't seen him do much over the last couple of years, so he's got a long way to go. I think Okonkwo is pretty interesting, especially for Dynasty, where you could probably get him cheap, throw him on your bench. You don't have to start him right away and kind of see how it works out. And I think I've said to you before, kind of going after like waiver wire tight ends, you know, rookie tight ends were like third, fourth, fifth round guys. Even like making trades like this for guys that are like lower level that maybe people aren't paying enough attention to, that has been a very, very profitable thing for me, particularly in Dynasty, even in analyst league. So I think that's a smart move, because unless you're in a tight end premium, people don't rate tight ends enough, and you can turn around and trade them as parts of packages. But anyway, moving on, let's stick with the Commanders here. This is one that I don't even know if I have an answer to this, Harmon. Dynasty value for the Commanders backfield. So Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, we still have Bill there. They go out and get Rashad White. They go out and get Jerome Ford. They bring back Jeremy McNichols. You mentioned earlier, they're still in the mix potentially if Jeremiah Love falls there, which I don't even think is probably going to happen at this point. But as it stands with those four guys that I rattled off, how are you viewing these guys for dynasty value?
Can I say, someone to be named later is the dynasty value, like a rookie to be added later? Okay. I think if Jeremiah Love gets to the seventh pick, they run the card up and like that's that. But will he get there? I do tend to doubt it, although I think, man, of all the teams that are picking in the top seven, like the Giants, it doesn't make that much sense. The Titans doesn't really make that much sense to me necessarily, but Washington, I actually think it could make sense, because like, and this kind of goes back to the likely Okonkwo debate. Like, I think Jaxson Dart is going to be good. I know Jaden Daniels is good. So, like, that's another reason why I think it would just, like, you're maximizing an offense that we think already could, that was a top five offense just 2 years ago because of the quarterback for the most part. Like, adding someone to this backfield, I think, would make a lot of sense to me, because, like, yeah, they added Rashad White. I mean, my God, they gave him like a $2 million base contract. They barely are paying him anything. $4 million instead. My best friend, Andrew, we grew up together. We grew up in the Northern Virginia area. So this is some real Nova humor for the people out there. He sent me some tweet. It was like, Rashad White's going to have to live in Dale City, which is the town we live near, Dale City. Going to have to commute up to Ashburn from Dale City with the contract the Commanders gave him. So that's funny to like 10 people who are listening to this show, but it is very proof positive. They barely gave Rashad White any money, but I still think like of the guys on the roster right now, he would probably be my favorite to lead the team in touches and things like that this year, because he's valuable in the passing game. He's good in protection. And to me, I just don't know that Bill has the ability to do that. And guys like, you know, McNichols and Ford, like that, I just don't think they're in consideration at all here. So I think the answer should be someone to be named later. If I had to pick on guys on the roster right now, I think I'm going White over Bill. Do you feel the same way?
In terms of redraft, I think it's probably White over Bill. And again, going into this blind, not knowing who they're going to add or if they're going to add anyone else. But I would have said like a week ago, I would have thought that Bill was coming out of this offseason pretty clean. And I was slightly worried that they were going to take a running back high. But now that they filled out this depth chart, I'm not so confident that they're going to spend an early pick on a running back. I think Bill's like a sneaky winner of this offseason. He's still pretty young. If they don't take a guy in the first few rounds, anybody that's going to come in and like truly compete, I still think there's a chance that he could be the one that leads this backfield. And maybe I'm just down on Rashad White because I've always kind of viewed him as a guy that isn't a long-term starter. And I think we saw this last year, right? Like with the Bucks, when Bucky Irving was out early on, remember Rashad White had some great games, but we said the longer this goes on, if Irving doesn't come back, I think Sean Tucker is going to get more and more involved. And that's exactly what happened. They started to give Sean Tucker more work, even more work than White at times. So we'll see. I think early in the season, Rashad White will probably come out of the gates and get a bunch of work. But over time, it would not shock me at all if they stay with this group, if JCM actually ends up being the guy in this backfield and still has fantasy value. So someone who I also think you could potentially maybe get a little bit cheaper right now. I wouldn't particularly go after Rashad White. I don't think the ceiling's there. Maybe I'll be wrong and he'll catch 60 passes this year and have a great season. Or maybe, like you said, they will still draft someone high and that'll be a problem. And then I want to finish things off today, Harmon.
Real quick, Boone. Do you think you are not accounting enough for the best friends narrative? You know, Rashad White said Jaden Daniels is his best friend. Do you think you're not?
I debated if I should bring that up. I was still just, you know, sad over the fact that you said someone else was your best friend and I didn't even get consideration. You know how competitive I am. Is there like a contest? Is there like an obstacle course I can race this guy in? Like, let's go, man. All right. We got to finish it off because
he's got like 30 years on you. So we got a good thing
I'm
going.
Like my odds, I think this is great. I feel good about this.
We got a good thing going, me and you. You're rocketing up the rankings in terms of best friends. But I mean, I've just known him for like 30 years. He's like my brother. So, you know, like we'll see.
All right,
I'm not going to say 0% chance, but you know, we'll see. Leave the door open for
it. Yeah. Do you go 30 minutes overtime on podcasts with him in the middle of March? No, I don't think so. All right. Anyway, we probably don't talk
for like 6 months at a time. That's when you know someone's really your best friend.
This is true. This is very true. I would say that about my own best friend. Yes, this is true. All right. Last one, Harmon. I will give you some time. I don't know if you've come up with a list like I have. I'm about to write an article on this later in the week, so I have a pre-made list with many names on it. Who are some sneaky under-the-radar players to stash on your dynasty bench? And this is one of my favorite things to do. As you can tell by me saying that I had Theo Weiss on a team, right? I'm going through the waiver wires. I'm in some very deep leagues. I am trying to find anyone with a little bit of shine who maybe could turn into that gem. Do you have any names top of mind that you want to throw out here?
Okay, so I don't have anybody in the Theo Weiss tier, but okay. I will always keep the can. I like the guys that I'm keeping the candle lit for, you know, receiver wise, you know, the Jahan Dotsons. Like that's somebody that I'll keep that guy stashed just in case the opportunity comes around. And I do think he's got a decent opportunity to be like a useful player for the Falcons. Sure, that's always there for me. But I would say this is more of like a big picture thought. And this is something I'm thinking about a lot regarding this wide receiver. Get Phil Moff off the screen. You got one of your own tweets on the show. We don't need Phil Moffa on the screen here, please. Yes, thank you very much. This is more of like a meta thought that I'm kind of have circling around the brain relative to this wide receiver class. I think a lot of the guys that are from last year's class that people are going to give up on after 1 year, I think are good like bench stashes, just maybe like more so good deep trade targets. I'm thinking about like the Jalen Knowles, the Jack Beshes, the Kyle Williams. Like those guys might be total zeros because we've talked about it. Like if you don't produce as a rookie, it's just the odds are very long. But especially as we start to get into rookie fever and prospect fever season, there's going to be a lot of guys in this year's class that are going to befall the same fate, even if they're good players. And like, I think Jalen Nolan, Torrey Horton, especially, we'll see about Besh. I think those guys showed in flashes that they could be good players, but they might just be banged because of the depth chart and stuff like that. There's like a bajillion receivers that are really interesting in this class. You almost just maybe want to just cycle out to the next guy, but I still think there's some merit to keeping those guys stashed from last year just in case. Hey, another year of experience in the league, that could be good for them. So that's not really like a total answer to your question, but it's just something I've been kicking around in my head relative to like deeper trade target, deeper stash candidates. And some of those guys from last year, I do still think are maybe interesting. It just obviously the shine has worn off them.
We talked about during the season, kind of waiting out some of the managers who draft rookies, you know, in the mid to later rounds of their redraft leagues. And after the first month, when they haven't done anything, they start to drop those guys and you can kind of sneak in and pick them up. And maybe when they do eventually do something later in the year, you didn't even have to draft them. You got them off the waiver wire. That's kind of a version of this for Dynasty, right? Like you wait after that first year And there's a couple guys that, you know, you might be able to get low and still will break out. Because even though I said that earlier, it's not impossible for guys to break out, you know, after their first or second season if they've done nothing. Just the odds are a little less. I have a long list. I don't want to spoil the whole article that I'm going to write later in the week, but there's a couple names that I will mention, and I'll stick at what I think is the most actionable group, which is running back, right? You could always go pick up depth running backs, and maybe they're an injury away. I think some guys to look at who might be available on waiver wires, Jordan James on the 49ers. Right now, who's the backup running back for the 49ers? Will they draft someone? Knowing Kyle Shanahan, probably. But probably. Right now, it looks like Jordan James is getting talked up by the beat writers. He could potentially have a chance to be the number two there and overtake Isaac Arendo. Amari DeMarcado, who kind of flew under the radar. He also got signed by the Chiefs. Kenneth Walker's the starter. Amari DeMarcado right now is the number two in that backfield. So again, these guys are going to have to survive the NFL draft and, you know, not have someone of consequence come in. But right now, Amari DeMarcado, who's somebody who's flashed at times when he was with the Cardinals, could potentially be the number two with the Chiefs. I think you could get him cheap. And then Chris Brooks on the Packers. He's kind of quietly become their number two. Emmanuel Wilson left and obviously signed with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lloyd has just been hurt his entire young career. Who knows if he's ever going to be able to put it together. At the moment, Chris Brooks, who constantly ends up on waiver wires in the leagues I'm in, you could scoop him up and maybe end up with the number two running back for Green Bay. So those are some sneaky, deeper ones. People go out, grab them, throw them on your bench, and we'll see what happens, and we'll see if they actually do survive the NFL draft.
I like it. And I also think what we talked about with tight ends too, like just cycling those guys at the end of your bench, you know, then you eventually land on like a Juwan Johnson's a guy that was useful last year. And as somebody I did that with at the tight end position, where I'm like, ah, if he ever got a shot, like he could be pretty interesting. So kind of give you a big picture group of all the different positions there that you can handle this with Dynasty. But yes, as I have, I think I've said this on the show, I have determined that we are reading again in 2026. So just as we were reading again in 2025, we're reading again in 2026. So make sure you check out Boone's Deep Dynasty Stash article on the website, because I'm sure he's going to have just the sickest of sicko recommendations in that particular column, Boone, because that's what you do, my friend.
I have 15 names on the list right now, and I'm not done. So the article, I got a couple more days here to build it out, and there are some at every position. So don't worry. It's going to be a fun one.
Please let us know how long the list gets from 15, because if you got a couple days to work on it, I think it's going to get pretty beefy there. This show was a beefy one. But appreciate you as always, Boone. Yes, please make sure you check out all of his work on the website, Dynasty Trade Charts, the whole deal. If you made it through to the end of the show and you loved this segment, you're going to love those articles. That is going to do it for our show here today. But big news on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. We're going to have Boone pretty much consistently in the co-host chair here on these Tuesday episodes every single week. But on Thursday, yes, big news. Ray Garvin is back. He is making his triumphant return to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and he is going to be, for the most part here, leading up to the NFL draft in the co-host chair on the Thursday episodes for our Prospect Deep Dive series, and we are going to start at the quarterback position. So yes, on Thursday, live at 2 p.m. Eastern, Ray and I are going to break down the quarterback prospects you need to know for the 2026 NFL Draft. That is going to be live right here, as I said, 2 p.m. Eastern on YouTube on this very channel. Until then, we are out.